Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Rich, I think the biggest news coming out of tonight's episode of Raw is the storyline firing of Bobby Lashley. What do you make of that decision? Yeah, Bobby Lashley upset with a referee who didn't do anything wrong, trying to avoid being crushed in the corner when Seth was trying to escape the Hurt Lock, and he dove to ringside. He didn't actually get bumped, but he didn't bump to the floor, sold an ankle injury, was a little late getting in the ring count a Lashley pin after a spear. Seth then turned a subsequent spear, which is a cool finishing move, good counter to the spear, and scored the pin. Lashley upset afterwards, knocked out one ref with a back elbow, and then shoved Adam Pearce. When Adam Pearce ran out to try to talk some sense into Lashley, he said, "My hands are going to be tied. I told you. I warned you." Lashley shoved him. Pearce blew his temper, lost his temper, and said, "You're fired." And then Lashley looked around bewildered, going, "I'm what? What's going on here? Just give him off for the holidays or a few weeks off, and then high power or some stipulation to get him back? What do you make of it, and where do you see it going?"
Well, I think Bobby had his chance to kind of keep calm. I disagree. I think that referee, just basic logic to me, you twist your ankle, you see a pinfall, just lay on the mat and cover it from there. And that sort of egregious error, especially with the how slow he counted versus the speed with which he counted for Seth Rollins. I want to check his social media. I want to see if this guy is a Seth Rollins fan. He's got some money on it or something. Like, if this was an NFL game, I would be beside myself. I think this story is going to build to however Lashley gets his job back, and I'm assuming it's going to be a match or something of that nature to win his job back, akin to what happened with Loomis and The Miz. That seems to be a storyline that they enjoy using and really using. So I think that's kind of there. And with the way that they're positing Seth Rollins, it's quite sure what he is. And so figuring that out will be fun as well.
It looks like, and I don't know why, but I want to warn listeners that we had a setting error here, and I can't imagine why, where it says we only have a minute left of the live stream. So there's something funky going on with our switchboard. So we're going to lose access to our live stream, which is kind of a bummer. So I don't think we can reset this midstream. So if you're on hold and listening, stay on, because we'll be able to continue to stream for people who are listening through the phone lines. If you haven't called in yet and you want to listen, do it now, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Not quite sure what's happening here, because it's weird that it's happening in just a few minutes into the show here and not at the top or bottom of the hour, which is usually how that happens. So we apologize for that. We'll probably have a bit of an augmented show as a result, but feel free to give us a call if you want to listen to the live stream through the phone rather than trying to hook up on the internet, and we'll troubleshoot this as we go. So anyway, with that said, Rich, so as far as how the storyline goes with Lashley's return and Adam Pearce making the decision that he made, is this a case where is an argument made, hey, you know, Lashley thought he was being attacked from behind. He didn't know it was a referee. Pearce got physical with him or got in his face, and somebody takes Lashley's side in management and overrules Pearce? Or because I don't know who the rival of Lashley would be, because traditionally in wrestling, there's a rival who says, "I want him back, and I don't suspend him, don't fire him, I want him in the ring." I don't really see that happening with anybody at this point. So I guess storyline-wise, I'm just kind of curious how they resolve this. And Rich, are you muted?
No, I lost you for a good 60 seconds. Whatever you were saying just didn't pop up, and you're starting to kind of like digitally wobble.
Oh,
I don't know if it's my end.
No, it's a Well, a weird technical start to the show. I asked how you think they're going to tell the story with Lashley, where it's heading, given that Lashley could make the case. I didn't see that it was a referee I back elbowed. I thought it was Seth or someone else attacking me. Maybe Pierce overreacted. Does some other authority figure come in from WWE and overrule Pierce? Or is Lashley just going away for a while and they're just going to have him come back later and they haven't even figured it out yet? They're just writing him off TV for a while.
I think it's going to be the latter. Especially if they're going to do something with him going into, say, Rumble season. Right now, getting him off of TV isn't the worst thing in the world. And I enjoyed earlier them setting the stage with this by having him come out, even if it was during that Miz segment, to say, I'm not going to allow chaos on this show. So that kind of planted the seeds with Pierce that he was here to kind of make sure things are on the straight and narrow. And so with the first, you know, Lashley's history, just like Brock, of manhandling referees coupled with back-to-back referee beatdowns in a main event as a result of him losing, it's definitely not outside of the realm of possibility he just takes that time off. And I don't think it's a bad thing. You have him come back in January. He gets heated up for someone. And my question alongside that is, in terms of your first thought, there isn't really someone I can think of as an authority figure that can come in and overrule him, because they really haven't, if anything, outside of the Sonya Deville Pierce duel, they have done a really good job of having him set as the Jack Tunney of this generation of televised wrestling for WWE.
I'm trying to think ahead to WrestleMania. Let's step back and think, what are the options for Lashley for WrestleMania, and then maybe work backwards from there. And would that involve, in some form or fashion, Paul Levesque, Triple H, deciding to make an infrequent appearance in order to get Lashley back? In order to, I'm kind of on the fly here, trying to come up with some storyline reason that he had come back to face somebody. So yeah, what seems to be a good WrestleMania matchup for him, and then can we book backwards from there to try to figure out what they might do?
Yeah, if he's not in the title scene, and it doesn't look like he will be. Him and Brock is always a welcome match. That sort of Haas fight is a solid one. If Big E is healthy and back by then, him coming back as a heel wouldn't be a bad thing to go up against him.
Have you heard anything on that, by the way? So, real quick on Big E.
No, he's been
okay. I just want to be sure.
He's been more and more active in terms of coming out and doing things. But that isn't an indicator of clearly physical activity. But he is starting to look like Big E, as opposed to right after his rehab where he kind of couldn't lift. And, you know, he is this massive man, and so he started to shrink a little to, like, normal man proportions. And so now he's kind of getting back to Big E size, and so that bears watching. And I can also think who in NXT would be there, and I would say Bron Breakker. If they're going to pull him up, that would be a nice little welcome to the big league, so to speak, matchup for Bron as an introduction to the main roster fandom.
Interesting, yeah. And does Adam Pearce have authority over NXT? Like, I mean, structurally, like in terms of the narrative of the three shows in WWE, could this be a way to get Lashley to NXT to take on Braun, say at the next PLE? What are they calling it?
Saint
Valentine's Day. It's not Massacre, is it? We're staying away.
No,
from
they
that,
didn't
aren't
do
we?
Massacre because they're staying Good. Away from that. It's Valentine's Day. I'll look it up while we're chatting. But I know it's
I'm going to try to beat you to it here. NXT Vengeance Day. Okay.
Vengeance Day. Okay, yep. So it's the best. They took one of the worst titles of their go-to pay-per-view and mixed it with Valentine's Day. Yeah, yep. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. So, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, you mentioned Bron Breakker's name, and that made me think, oh, maybe Shawn Michaels hires Lashley. And Triple H doesn't overrule it, and Pierce is, you know, if they're looking to give a boost to NXT and think that would freshen him up. Because to me, Lashley was, and I definitely want to get your thoughts on this, because Lashley has gone through so many stretches where I'm like, this is really good. This is a really good use of Bobby as a heel. This is really good use of Bobby as a babyface. This is an unexpected hot run. He's getting a great reaction. And like, there's three, four instances of that in the past few years, especially the last couple. And now I'm not quite sure who he is. He's against Seth, who's a babyface, but never really turned babyface. He just sort of morphed into it because fans like singing a song. And he's still kind of obnoxious, but in a way that, you know, as Corey Graves tries to frame it, it's trying to get in the heads of his opponents and psych himself up. And so in this sort of three-way U.S. title situation, Lashley's just sort of Lashley. There's not a reason – you sort of just pick whether you want to root for him or not. And he's good, and he's a star. But it doesn't feel – I don't feel like if they actually have him off TV for a while, it's going to be that devastating, like they're cutting off momentum at this point. Talk a little bit about where you think Lashley's – his ups and downs, his peaks and valleys have been. And do you agree with me? Maybe just some time away and coming back to be reset is good, because I would not – characterized, even though they had a little vignette tonight and made him feel like a big deal, I don't think Paul Levesque's done a great job defining who he is and how we should feel about him.
Yeah, Bobby has entered into that late stage, call it the Big Show effect, where you can turn and turn and turn, and he hasn't entered the stage where that is ineffectual to fan reaction in terms of like, hey, we just like you however you are. He does a good job of getting the fans either boo him or cheer him, but they can make him effective at whichever one he wants. I think the time away helps with that because you don't get that jarring kind of whiplash effect of what am I supposed to be doing with him. And so whether it's him in NXT, and to that point with NXT, thinking about it, they didn't do anything with the New Day as far as Pierce saying, I'm sending these guys down to shake things up, or they just appeared. Just because they had beef with Pretty Deadly for some reason. And so I think if Lashley were to show up in NXT, similar to what happened with Carlo Cruz, he just shows – I think you can see where they got the name from. You'd think that he would be a pretty solid guy to wrestle either, like I said, Braun, Carmelo Hayes, or even one of the up-and-coming big men. Like, say, if they're going to be doing Gacy, I think him and Gacy might have a decent match, too. I don't know if Gacy's of that ilk. I think Braun is by far, followed closely by Carmelo, the top guys I would have him wrestle. And then after that, I don't know if he's using his time effectively and bumps effectively in terms of the ratio of, like, bump to future earning potential, because I don't see him being a trainer down the road, so him being in NXT isn't exactly something that's going to appeal to him as a bonus.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about the main event tonight. What'd you think of Seth and Lashley, the setup, the build-up, the match quality, and what ultimately was accomplished with Seth winning, again, what I thought was a cool finishing sequence, to earn a shot against Austin Theory?
I think that sets Seth up as just enough of an irritant that the fans can still chant and cheer, but not enough where it was his fault directly. Even though, again, I would argue that spot was specifically set up for him to back into the ref. But the ref, for once in his life, there was a referee that saw what was coming and got out of the way. But then I feel bad because it's like they're setting it up to say the ref's unathleticism led to him hopping out of the ring and twisting his ankle. I think about, like, right now the World Cup's going on, which I have thoughts on how they promoted that tonight too, because that was quite funny when you're trying to serve two masters. If you notice, they mentioned Peacock, but Peacock isn't showing the World Cup in English. That is, it's showing Telemundo on Peacock. If you want to watch it in English, you'd have to watch it on Fox, and so that way you can promote the World Cup, but then keep it to the broadcast partner you're using for Monday night without losing any, because it was not like, you can watch it on Fox too. It's like, no, you can watch it on Peacock. And then they're like, that little symbol there on the left, don't worry about that little symbol. It just means Peacock.
Back to Lashley Seth, just match quality wise, has wanted as part of, I think, a defining trait of his early months to have good, lengthy wrestling matches. Sometimes I think they're longer than they ought to be, like, and we'll get into it, like how long it took Solo Sikoa to beat Elias. It wasn't a super long match, but probably longer than it should take Solo. But I think that's almost – I wouldn't say it's Paul Levesque, you know, like, trying to send a message about 3 hours is too long, but I think it is a consequence of having 3 hours to fill and just trying to add a few minutes here and there to fill it out. But that's another point we'll get to. But in terms of just match quality and the purpose that it served, I guess I would say they had a solid match that you would expect from them. And the finish was to establish Seth with a somewhat clean win, And, you know, an impressive win given even given the circumstances, and then have the angle with Lashley. But I think it did serve a purpose of being a marquee main event because they're two big names and they went, you know, roughly, I don't know, 12 or 13 minutes. So it had enough length, but it wasn't, it didn't come across as like a monumental defining, you got to see this match. What's kind of your summation of it?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I thought it was a solid Raw main event. You got from point A to point B, overarching storyline throughout this third hour of the night. And while there was a similar referee situation in the Dominic Guerrero, the Asuka match, I can't keep them straight because after Corey Graves called him the Caliente Guerrero, I don't even know. That dude sometimes just goes firing. The Asuka match had a ref situation where I've never seen that before, where the ref was so busy yelling at the person on the apron that he noticed he should have been doing his job, which is just so over the top, because I would hope at that point I wanted to see more tapping so that way the ref could say, well, I can't count the tap because I clearly see that you're out here just handing stuff, you know, just got your foot on the rope. But in the case of Bobby and Seth, well worked, not a PLE level 25-minute main event, but I think in the 13 minutes they told what they needed to tell, and they needed to save that time anyway because they wanted to effectively illustrate how much they needed, I guess, Bobby's gone bad or Bobby's gone wild in terms of the finish of the show and this overall overarching story of the show.
One other aspect that I want to cover, it was a lead into this, and they had a Dolph Ziggler promo, which I found mind-numbing and insufferable, and I'm not sure why. I just glazed over and had to rewind it. I'm like, what is he even talking about? And his mannerisms are so Dolph. It's just, and that's not a good thing. There's a lot of positive traits about Ziggler, but this, and he wasn't like yelling just to yell, which, you know, of course irritates me when he does that. So he didn't have his worst bad habit, but I just didn't even like really understood what he was talking about. It's like, Theory doesn't know what it's like to put a show on his back. And it's like, who are you to talk about that? And they didn't address that he ruined a U.S. title match for a guy who didn't deserve to have it ruined, Mustafa Ali, last week. They didn't sufficiently address, like, hey, dude, you just interfered in a match and cost a guy in the flow of a match a chance to maybe win the title or at least find out if he, you know, could win. And Ziggler's just out there talking about Theory not being able to carry things on his back. I feel like between Dolph Ziggler, with Dolph Ziggler's promos, it's either him or they just have like the worst writer on staff, always working with them on his promos to just like not make the best of bad situations or make good situations bad. So I don't want to make too much out of it, but I was really thinking, I mean, Javier messaged me like a whole backstory of, he's like, well, here's what was going on with Mustafa and Ziggler. And it like totally made sense. And I'm like, oh, that's what they're going to cover this week. And nope, we didn't get it this week. I'll throw this at, well, go ahead, Rich, with your thoughts on the Ziggler promo. And then I'll say what Javier said that I just think they needed to get into here.
Yeah, I think looking at Ziggler, he perpetually, you mentioned it's the worst writer. It could be the best writer. He's just not going to listen. That's been the story of his career on the main roster. I will not listen until it's absurdly too late. And so him doing this is just the latest evolution of his starlet laying on the couch, smoking a long cigarette, talking about how Hollywood's passed her by. That's what he's done for the last 7 years, almost 10 years. And that's kind of scary considering how long he's been in that company. And so I look at what he did in that promo as just more Dolph. I thought where you were going to go when you said it. It's either serving whatever he wants, or instead of whatever he wants, or the worst writer. It's just him. It's serving him.
Yeah.
He even said that during the conversation with Mustafa Ali after the match. I needed to get payback. You couldn't have waited 6 minutes. You couldn't have waited.
Yeah, exactly.
You couldn't have challenged this guy to a non-title match at insert match show here, because you clearly have done that with other people you've feuded with. So why would you break up the cadence of that now? Other than I wanted to attack and I need what I want now, now, now.
And Theory's a baby, or Theory comes across as a babyface here. I mean, who can look at Ziggler and go, yeah, I'm rooting for him. There's a level of cluelessness to what this business is about. And, you know, like what it means to cut a promo that makes sense and drives a certain emotional response from fans. And he's not doing it. And I don't want to like beat up on it too much. I'll throw at you here what Javier said about last week's attack. He said Ziggler attacked Theory because Theory took him out of action in the brutal beatdown that signposted Theory's character change after botching the cash-in. Ziggler came back for revenge, costing Ali the last chance at the title that Theory was ever going to give Ali. This creates an issue between Ali and Ziggler and will likely head to a triple threat, as you fear. I don't like the storyline, but that is like the storyline. But the key component is for Mustafa Ali to speak out and complain, which WWE doesn't like their babyfaces doing. So then they look like wusses because they don't stand up for themselves when somebody like Ziggler does an utterly selfish, unnecessary move. And then Ziggler comes back, and now, I mean, who isn't going to – who – everybody should be cheering Theory against Ziggler based on what Ziggler did to Ali, because Ali is a likable wrestler. So it's just a mess, and there's just way too many – Ziggler storylines that are a complete mess. I even got into it on Twitter once with him. It's such a thing with him. It's like, I just watch him like, I don't share much in common with him when it comes to what I think makes sense to try to get fans invested in what a wrestler is doing. Anyway, Rich, go ahead.
Yeah, I think about, I always like to mix things up with other sports, and I think about, I heard a quote from the Jets coach a couple of weeks ago before they played the Vikings, and they were talking about their new quarterback as opposed to the old guy, which is, by old guy, I mean number 2 overall pick. They said that the guy, Mike White, makes the easy things look easy. And that's kind of one of the best phrases a coach can give you and one of the worst indictments one can give you. And because, much like Dolph Ziggler, I guess Zach Wilson makes the easy things look hard, and that's what Dolph Ziggler does. He makes the hard things look easy. He can do the bumps. He can do the wrestling. But in terms of just giving you a mission statement as to who he is, what he's about, and how he's telling a story, he makes it so difficult for you to agree / like him.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to come and haunt him with this, because as he does all of these things that lead to a traditional WWE triple threat, there is no neutral, you know, I think about like RPG, like lawful good, neutral good, or lawful evil, neutral evil, et cetera, et cetera. He's just Dolph Ziggler. And that means he's there. He's there to be an annoyance, and he's going to disappear. At least with Mustafa Ali, you know what his mission statement is. I'm here to prove that even despite everything going on, the light inside of me, what I'm trying to do for the greater good, what inspire people, is worth it for me. I will suffer through this. You look at Austin Theory. I'm an egotist. I want to do whatever I want. I've learned from the failure I've had publicly with the Money in the Bank. And that's made me even more convinced that my way is right, because I fixed what was failing me. Dolph Ziggler, we don't have that anymore because we've seen him. That's the best and worst thing that ever happens with Dolph Ziggler. You've seen him at his best. You've seen him at his worst. You've seen him at his mediocre. There isn't an in-between anymore. There isn't the closest he had was that cup of coffee with the NXT title where he claimed he was trying to fix things for himself. But really, it was just more of the same. And so now that it's reached that point, there isn't anything I can say that's going to be like, oh, well, this is going to be here. Like, I appreciate Javier. Lord knows I've done that with numerous stories over the years. There are no blanks to complete. Sometimes the cigar is just a cigar, or sometimes Dolph just Dolph.
All right. We got an email on this, which we'll get to in a moment, from someone who's going to call in, but is having a issue with our switchboard. But first, we're deep into the show, but I want to actually introduce the show, introduce each other here, Rich. So let's get to that. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, December 12th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, which covers Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We have a live stream, and then, of course, it's downloadable after the fact on our podcast feed, which is compatible with just about every popular podcast app out there. And also host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. That's our blue logo show as opposed to this, our red logo show. And those are just regular podcasts, not post shows with live callers. And Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net will be joining me tomorrow for this week's flagship with a lot to talk about with the NXT special, the ROH pay-per-view, some TV ratings of note lately, not on the good side for AEW and Raw. And then we'll just start kind of looking at the end of the year and what's coming up early next year. So if you have questions for the flagship, be sure to email us ASAP, because Jason and I will be recording on Tuesday afternoon. The email is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. This is when I'd normally give out the phone number, but because we're having some issues with our call-in switchboard, I won't do that. But you can always find information on our post shows at wadekellerpostshow.com and navigate to our live link. We also have the phone number, email, and link at pwtorch.com in my TV reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then also we put up an alert on Twitter at pwtorch. The other voice you hear on the show is Rich Fan. He is a Pro Wrestling Torch columnist. He is a longtime podcaster for PW Torch, and he is the star of Everything with Rich and Wade, which is a signature VIP podcast series going on. Is it 2 years, Rich? It's going on 2 years, isn't it?
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Rich, welcome. Good to have you back on one of the post shows here.
Yeah, good to be back. Always happy to do it. And I'm definitely looking forward to, as we have been, chatting Raw and chatting however we can, technology allowing, with our listeners.
Yeah, definitely. So I do apologize to those who downloaded the show and were hoping to listen to our live stream. This may or may not affect our ability to have our on-site correspondent with us, but we were hoping to hear from Chris F. in Milwaukee. So we'll see if we can't patch him in somehow also. If you want to be an on-site correspondent for the show, by the way, if you're attending a future Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, we'd love to have those on a semi-regular basis on the shows. You can let me know if you're attending a future Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown at that email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Rich, tell people now about the podcast that you're involved in, because I mentioned Everything with Rich and Wade, our show. Talk in particular about the VIP version of the East Coast Cast and how people can listen to the free version too.
Sure. So the East Coast Cast, as I always say, is not minivan friendly. Myself, Cameron Hawkins, and Travis Bryant. Travis has been doing it in different iterations over the last decade or so. First with Padre Purnell, and then Cam on the free side, then Josh Mustachio, Padre, and then now me for the last 7 years as of a week ago. We've been working together to talk about wrestling in a way that's kind of hopefully outside of what you're thinking. And sometimes in order to do that, we don't talk about wrestling. Sometimes we talk about politics, life, television, the Entertainment Coast Cast. And I think on the VIP side of things, we've had some great people who write in, some great folks who leave messages. But more importantly, I think over the last 7 years, Travis and I have been able to kind of show our relationship and how it's developed and how we want to present wrestling to y'all in terms of how we see it and how we sometimes don't always see eye to eye on it. And so it's a fun experience just as much as what I've done, I guess, in the last 4.5, almost 5 years with the deep dive. First as myself on the Daily Cast side of things with guest hosts. And then as life has gotten a lot more hectic, Dave has, Will has been kind enough to, Dave, my God, join me on my journey and then bring it into the VIP waters where we meet. The goal is monthly, but it's turned into every 6 weeks because if you work in higher education right now, a lot of times you have people leaving random times. And so I'm in that boat. And so with wrestling, I try to do my main things as the main thing. And then with the deep dive, myself and Will are trying to keep that afloat with solid interviews, great commentary, and hopefully your emails. You could always go to everythingwithrich@gmail.com for either show, and I'll be happy to put that stuff in there. And I would also say at some point, travel, weather, and health permitting, I think we're going to actually be able to do a deep dive some point in 2023 in person in the UK, as I'll be trying to travel over there to see some soccer matches or football matches.
Wow,
I guess once I
cool.
cross the Atlantic.
Yep.
As one of my little bucket list types of things to do. And so Will Harry has some ideas on people we can interview and things we can do. And I was like, well, we can just see the sights too. You know, you don't have to like schedule a week of interviews and stuff while I'm over there. Like, come on. So I look forward to that. And I always look forward to any sort of contribution I can do here, whether it's through my articles in the newsletter or podcasting with you and our illustrious colleagues.
All right, excellent. Let's get back to talking Raw here. I mentioned we had an email on the last topic we talked about. And this, again, is from Matt K., Matt from Delaware, who says, I wanted to call in tonight, but the Block Talk platform is malfunctioning. I heard you mention that earlier in the show, and then it cut off. So I'm emailing. With Dolph Ziggler cutting the promo he did, what role did you see him playing in the Theory U.S. title match with Rollins? Why do you and Rich think that Theory is always seemingly feuding with one guy and then another guy gets involved and then Dolph jumps in, i.e. last week he picked a fight with Ali and then Dolph interfered, all the while he has a looming match with Rollins and Lashley coming up, or Lashley. In other words, why is he always pulled in so many different directions rather than just having one feud with one opponent going on for a period of time? Do you think this is good for Theory's character and his character's story? So that's part one of his email. My short answer is I don't think it's good for Theory. I don't think it's good booking, but I don't mind having a champion with multiple people coming after him. So I'll say that as a caveat. If you have a championship and you have 3, 4, 5 wrestlers who are all at the same time gunning for you, that works. I think the issue is Theory is so new in this spot with this character that I think giving him a solid, likable, credible babyface opponent to beat where fans are booing him and rooting against him and invested in his opponent would be better given the way that WWE's framework of booking operates and how fans have come to what fans have largely come to expect over the years. And so that's a negative. And then if you're going to have multiple people coming after you, you know, just have it make more sense along the way. You know, the Ali Dolph thing isn't handled well. I don't think Dolph belongs in this situation, or if you want to have a one-off match with a babyface Dolph against a heel Theory because you think you're just trying to come up with backstories to build the TV main events, just tell a better story. And it doesn't have to be Ziggler interfering in a match. Rich, Ziggler could just win some other matches to earn a title shot, and it doesn't even have to explicitly be a four-way where the winner gets a U.S. title shot. It could just be on the merits of winning other matches. Maybe, and this I don't mention this a lot, but I think it's an underutilized avenue, is have him go on a hot streak on WWE main event. And or they could even mention house show matches or other matches on Raw that aren't televised and let people know when you go to Raw, sometimes there's non-televised matches that you get to see. And just go, he's 8-1 or he's won 8 straight. And, you know, Adam Pearce has deemed he's a contender. Like, I wish there was a simple, more straightforward sports-like approach to how people earn title matches and just the fallback of the kind of gimmicky elimination style matches or mini tournaments that WWE does. So those are some of my initial thoughts, but overall, don't mind multiple challengers all at once. I just don't think they should all be blended in like they have been, leading to, I think, emotional ambivalence about his opponents leading into what should ultimately be some good one-on-one matches.
Yeah. Part of that is also you look at one of their most important characters that they've kind of utilized over the last few years, despite absences, and Becky Lynch. And the reason she became the man was they had accidentally set her up with a 10-month win streak. So when she did finally challenge for the championship, she not only seemed like a viable contender, but she seemed like someone I should support because she doesn't lose. She isn't doing those things that Dolph's doing. She isn't trying to take shortcuts. She isn't doing the heel special of let me just stand here for a little bit and then I'm going to let this guy slip on a banana peel and Miz my way into wins. And so I would hope with Dolph, especially with the number of years he's been in the company, you can give him a couple of wins on television, and it doesn't seem like it's a crime against humanity. But apparently, we are not in the booking room seeing it the same way they are, and that's a little disappointing.
Because Ziggler's going to give you a good career. Ziggler's going to give you a good match. Like, as much as I think his promos are typically awful, he can go out there and just, like, actually the less he talks, sort of the better if he's going to be a babyface. And, you know, I mean, you can make an argument for him. He's better off as a face or a heel, but give us some reason to feel a certain way about him, but certainly don't have him do this sort of self-involved, long-winded nonsense promo that he gave tonight where he seems to just be in his own head and it makes sense to him, but it doesn't make a lot of sense otherwise. I don't know. In the ring, I mean, I'm never going to I'm never going to be disappointed when the bell rings and Dolph Ziggler is one of the wrestlers in the ring. You know, I mean, he's a really good wrestler. So, yeah, just have him win some matches and let us see him and go, hey, you're in a US title match. And stay away from this nonsense of trying to wedge him into this Ali match and wedge him into what's going on with Seth and Lashley, where it seemed like he was going to do something. He says, watch your back, and then nothing came of it.
Yeah, I think of what he used to say, like, what was it, follow that, whenever he would win matches.
Mm-hmm.
If you even return to that and have him win, and that's all he's doing. There isn't a post-match interview. There isn't a pre-match interview. He's just yelling at the camera afterward. And then you say, oh, wow, Dolph really seems like he's kind of finding his focus recently. And they recently just did that with going with Siri. And then also on the women's side, they're doing the reverse. Hoping setting up from what she's alluding to on Twitter with Asuka to her old gimmick of wearing the clown paint and stuff, because this is the first time I've ever seen her in WWE wrestle without any sort of face paint on.
Yeah, we'll get to that later too. Yeah, that's going to I definitely want to do a segment on that part of a segment on that. Okay, I want to move to some other points Matt brought up and then some other aspects of the show. I think we gave sufficient time to that main event and that Ziggler situation. Matt says, with Miz and Loomis fighting in a ladder match with two bags of money at stake, do you see a cop-out finish of them both grabbing one bag each? And for a backstory, because I know some people listen to us as a substitute for actually watching the show. And by the way, I recommend you go VIP because you can hear the Wade Keller Hotlines where I run down the show start to finish. I usually record that right after the post shows, and you can actually get fully caught up on what happened on the TV shows before you listen to the post shows with a full straight rundown of what happened along with some added analysis. So that said, they did an angle where Miz wanted his money back. He tried to steal it. And then Gargano said, hey, let's go Double or Nothing. You can have a rematch. Well, this is a long story short, by the way. They stretched this out quite a bit. Double or Nothing, we'll have a ladder match, two bags of money hanging above the ring. This initial money that's ours, and then you match it. And, you know, they did a whole thing where he had to ask his wife for the money, or Miz said he'd find a way to get it without asking his wife. And so there'll be two bags of money above the ring in a ladder match. Rich, does it seem like what Matt's bringing up is the obvious finish, or is it so obvious they won't do that because it's, like, so obvious and also sort of dumb, ultimately, if they both just end up with the money that they started with?
I think it's dumb, and I think especially if you're going by and Dan Keister, who also contributes and is a longtime listener here at the Torch, is far better gambler than I am. If you say Double or Nothing and you get half, that's a push, and that's not Double or Nothing. And given the Miz, I don't know, for those of you, I was actually joking with a few folks on Twitter about this. If you keep track of Miz's gambling habits, he is not the best person when it comes to these sorts of bets. And in storyline, both in wrestling, on up, up, down, down, and then also on Miz and Mrs., you can see every other time Miz has made a bet, whether it's for a video game or something that's going to happen, he loses, and he usually loses pretty big. So I can see why Maryse is kind of fed up, and now she holds the money. Because if you look on Up, Up, Down, Down, he had a Street Fighter fight, and he lost. And he was so mad that he lost, he demanded a rematch, and Xavier Woods said, okay, I'll give you a rematch, but if I win, I want your Intercontinental title. For those of you who don't know, in Miz's house, there is a portion of their house by the wall where all of the family's titles are propped up. Miz's WWE spinner title when he won it off of Cena, his Intercontinental, U.S., every title he's ever won, his tag, half of his tag title, and Maryse's titles as well. And so he loses the Intercontinental title, has to unscrew it from the wall with his wife asking, what is he doing, and give it to Xavier Woods. Then they have another Street Fighter fight. And instead of it being, you know, he's like, you know what? I got this. I know it. I can handle it. And so Xavier says, all right, for this one, if you really want it, then I want Maryse's belt that's up there. And he didn't tell her until, you know, after he's screwing it off the wall that he had gambled her stuff instead of his. And she was not happy, very clearly. And it wasn't the, like, I'm a pro wrestler, this is my spouse unhappy. It's, you idiot, why would you bet that unhappy? So I say all that to say, very believable that The Miz can't have access to the money because he would probably do dumb things like gamble in the back again, caught on national television, losing it on a poker game. I mean, just for the sheer, like, keeping this in the storyline of the WWE universe, there should never be a world in which you trust the APA, any APA member with a poker game, because they're always going to lead to a fight and it's always going to go bad. So, yeah, I think it's going to be probably they win double the money, and I hope it's a Brewster's Million situation where they win it, and then by the end of that show, they're just throwing it out into the crowd.
I do not know where they're going with this, but given that they did the Baron Corbin, you know, destitute thing, I'm glad they kind of clarified Miz isn't really poor. He's just on an allowance and doesn't have liquidity. And in a way, it, you know, makes him seem like, quote, less of a man is kind of how they're portraying it, because the wife has the purse strings and that kind of thing. And I don't know. I mean, this is sort of an additional thought on this. I just thought the segment was belaboring the point, went on too long, and I didn't think Gargano was particularly charismatic or likable here. And I am surprised, because I think their thinking was Gargano's going to seem likable up against Miz. We'll have Miz do his thing. Gargano's going to pester him. Fans are going to delight in seeing Gargano pester Miz and prod him and make him embarrass him. But, Rich, Gargano isn't – this is like the least likable he's been. He was more likable as a heel because he was supposed to be kind of abrasive or obnoxious. And as a babyface, when he was just Johnny Wrestling, it was just like this fighting spirit to him. And I don't know what's going on, but I don't think the chemistry with Gargano, just acting like he's the smartest guy in the room, is going to outwit the smarmy Miz. It just isn't working for me. And this was another segment where I just kind of got the feeling that if Raw was 2 hours, they would have kept this shorter and it would have been better. And that Levesque's philosophy is there's only so many segments per show. And we're going to, when there's stars out there like Miz or somebody like Gargano we're trying to build, they just need to take up a lot of TV time, and it goes longer than it ought to. You could have had a quick segment with Miz and Gargano backstage and had Ziggler win a really good match in like 6 minutes without a commercial break in the middle against a up-and-coming wrestler who was trying to score a big win. That would be part of the story of Ziggler earning a U.S. title shot in a more traditional way, as an example. Doesn't have to be exactly that, but instead we get this drawn-out segment with an unlikable Gargano. I think Miz made the best of it. You know, I think he's good at the role that he's trying to play, but I don't think it's working really well with Gargano. Your thoughts on that aspect to that?
Yeah, and even to your point about it's interesting. Vince McMahon's gone, and there's certain comedy points that him and his son-in-law share, most notably a man's emasculated by his wife holding the purse strings. The Miz calling Gargano out and saying, you know Candace does the same thing for you, and he's like, touche. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, okay, so we're all idiots and our wives are maintaining our accounts. We both see eye to eye on this. Like, that's our one in commonality. And I respected that, because at that moment, Johnny went from irritant to a little bit of a mix of the Johnny wrestling and then the way Johnny Gargano. Because we've seen that. When he was in the way, he was absolutely unhinged. And at some points, Candace had to kind of bring him back from the ledge. And at other points, she would kind of bring him deeper into it. I mean, shoot, look at last week when they won the money. I greatly enjoyed more than anything her looking in the bag and going from this heartfelt speech about how she finally worked her way back to health and she's ready to fight the damage control. And she said, oh, we got to go. It was just so craven and just absolutely just like, I felt like if you looked in Triple H's movie collection, it's going to be a lot of the same slapsticky toilet humor that Vince likes. Plus, maybe you add in a couple of more quote-unquote sophisticated movies like It's a Bad, Mad, Mad, Mad World or something like that, because it's clear he likes those little journeys into silliness and just having people kind of like not necessarily sell themselves out, but do really dumb things for money. And I really think that this match ultimately is going to lead into, hopefully, the sooner they get away from The Miz and they find someone a little more serious, the better Johnny Gargano is going to be. I hope, because looking at what they're doing, I hope that the next step of his evolution on the main roster isn't this game show host where he's going to carry through the good middle third of Raw with these sorts of shenanigans with everyone, because that's not going to help him.
Yeah. All right, Matt also brings up with Kevin Owens refusing to help Elias, but then running in for the save to hit a stunner on Solo, then eventually stunning Elias as well. Doesn't look they're shaping him as the DTA type like Steve Austin was. I mean, there's no question. Austin and Owens, I think, have a bit of a kinship. But in this case, it just sort of fits, too, because it's Elias. And KO has a history with him. This wasn't some random stunner. This is a guy who tormented KO. And what makes sense for Kevin Owens' gimmick to be to decide, yeah, I'm going to let bygones be bygones and be Elias' friend. So Kevin Owens is a guy who has a sense of right and wrong, which is I'm not going to let Solo and Sammy hurt this guy who asked for my help, and he seems to be trying to make nice. Yet at the same time, this guy's still an annoyance, and I'm going to give him a stunner. If you're going to – they shouldn't do Elias KO as a match. I mean, that should just be something Kevin Owens did to let him let people know he's an individual. And he does have that don't trust anyone approach. And Elias just go about his business. So your thoughts on Kevin Owens' role. And then also, Rich, your thoughts on the length of this match. Because I came away from that match thinking Solo Sikoa is less of a badass than I thought he was. Because it's Elias. And Elias isn't a serious wrestler. And I just don't think he should have lasted that long against Solo. And again, I think if Raw were 2 hours, that would have been a 3-minute match, and it would have been just fine. You know, people aren't going to – Elias isn't going anywhere as a credible wrestler. He's there to sing songs and be kind of a mid-card, you know, utility guy. So he should have been destroyed by Solo, and then he and Sammy can still beat him up and be heels afterwards. Rich, your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, it's the curse of 3 hours. I believe – I'm with you, and I think it would have been a shorter match, but I also think – looking at, because for me, I thought make it a shorter match, but then let's re-educate or educate people to who Umaga is so that you can see why he's throwing tribute to Umaga by using the spike, by doing certain moves now as his transitions. But maybe that comes later when he's more established and you're kind of pushing him further up the card. I think for this, And to answer the emailer's point, sure, it's DTA Steve Austin, but as you said, it's the internal logic making sense, which is something, again, we talked about this last week on everything. Having a general path that these wrestlers are on. For 8 months, this guy lied to me and said he was Ezekiel. Now he's saying he's Elias. why would I trust him? Either he's crazy, in which case I shouldn't trust him, or he's just a really good liar, and again, shouldn't trust him. I won't go out there and have his back. But if it's something that he can do to spite Sami Zayn and the bloodline, he'll go out and do it after the fact. Like, if you win because of cheating, there's only so much he can do. But if they stay for a beatdown after, he's going to be an equalizer. And again, I like the point of, while he's being the equalizer, Sammy's getting out of Dodge before he can even get hit. And he kind of builds to that tension of, when is the first time he's going to hit Sammy, given these new kind of parameters to their relationship. In terms of the, again, just like with AEW, when they're renegotiating, if there's a way for WWE to make a little bit more money and give up that third hour, do it. I don't care what it is. Maybe you give them a little bit of a discount on selling them more rights to the network for a longer period of time, but getting rid of that third hour would lead to such a fresher product, such less burnout from the wrestlers and the writers and the just the whole audience.
Viewers.
So the whole, what they, the universe, you know, whatever you want to call it. No one would feel like that's a bad idea. And if anything, if you're going to keep that third hour, you already have, it's really your fourth hour, because early before that show starts, you have main event taping. And so, again, you got more energy for folks throughout the night, more energy for the first folks through a main event. If you want to do half the main event, take kind of that AEW perspective, half the main event in the first part, and then that second part's the other half, with a go home, thanks for coming main event, where there's people of a prominent nature, like John Cena did that a couple, 2 years ago, I believe, where he wouldn't show up during the show, but he would wrestle in main events just so folks would come. And so there's a million ways they can do this and make it palatable. I just hope that if it is that third hour, great. If it's going to be this for the next couple, next year and change, you see the difference in how Levesque versus McMahon would fill those hours. Because while I said they have similar predilections in terms of comedy, it is not totally a one-for-one, because you don't get as much of the schlocky kind of just stuff that you would get with Vince McMahon. You don't get the the genteel ignorance, I would say, at its best, and passive racism at its worst when it comes to the way certain characters are portrayed. Look at the difference in Tozawa tonight versus how he's been portrayed since he was on the main roster. Yep. Look at the way that Asuka's now being able to be a three-dimensional being instead of a woman that just speaks in guttural Japanese. I really like, if you go back to the feud that the Judgment – I'm sorry, not the Judgment Day, I'm sorry, Damage Control had with Bianca, Asuka, and I'm sure we'll get to Alexa Bliss. When Asuka got to yell at Io Shirai, or Io Sky now, I guess, in Japanese, and then someone was kind enough to translate it, it wasn't gibberish. It was storyline-based arguments with two women who were speaking another language.
Yes. Yep. All right, final point from Matt. Finally, with Asuka set to face, or excuse me, with Alexa set to face Bianca Belair, and Belair going on about their friendship in last week's promo, we have a face-to-face matchup. Is this an opportunity to turn Alexa Bliss heel again and align her with Bray somehow, even though he's featured on SmackDown? I just think the matchup is odd, although it was what I predicted it would be. Thanks for all that you do, and everyone go VIP. Thank you, Matt, for that, and giving us a lot of good talking points and introductions here to some of our topics or good lead-ins. Yeah, so let's cover the Alexa Bliss situation. I want to start by going, what do you make of the way that Bayley was pinned? Because we can make this point a little quicker, because it'll lead to the Alexa Bianca and Alexa's character talk. But Bayley not really being protected as like a top four act right now in the women's division. Do you agree with that premise? And is that okay? Or is it even good?
Yeah, I think that's fine. Because given how even under Triple H things have gone with heels specifically, this is one of those signs that she can become the snake in the grass. A lot of times when they have heels like this who kind of go out of nowhere from being protected to losing, that's setting them up for a bigger win storyline-wise down the road, whether that's historically with something like, say, a Money in the Bank or a Rumble or something of that nature. I think there's a way for Bayley to get in there and not have, the best event. Like, she doesn't have to do the woe is me card. She can sneak in and do something dirty and win the Rumble, and then she's right back on top. We just saw that with Austin Theory, only it was with losing the Money in the Bank after almost a year of celebrating how awesome he was with it. And so I'm not too worried about it. And then with reports that Charlotte is almost returning, Charlotte's going to be on SmackDown, and I'm not – again, if she was going to be on Raw, that would be a red alert to me, because it seems like that wouldn't be the smartest play. But if Becky and Bayley are on Raw and then Charlotte's on SmackDown, I think that's a pretty good place to be. And I said and I really shouldn't have. I was going to – my brain just wandered, so forgive me.
So let's talk about Alexa Bliss. She wins. She's facing Belair. They're, you know, setting up Alexa, somebody who's got something else influencing her. She went into a kind of Bray Wyatt type stance at the end there with the Sister Abigail setup, and just kind of lost her mind. And then Belair was like, "What's going on here?" And then Alexa just sort of shook out of it and wandered to the back. This seems like a logical next step in what they've been doing with her. And it does explain why Bliss is against Belair, because I think we'll see a high pro. They want the angle for whatever happens with Bliss to be in a high profile situation. And now they've set that up. I think there's a few too many exceptions to the dynamic of fans getting the opportunity to have that emotional release of having somebody they're rooting for and somebody they're clearly rooting against. It's one of the benefits that pro wrestling has, and if you choose that formula, which WWE largely has and is built around, you want to go to that more often than they are. And so now you have a situation where people like Bliss, and it works against Belair. This is one of those exceptions that I think would work if they were a little bit more structured and consistent otherwise with a face heel dynamic. That said, I think people are going to be really intrigued with what happens with Bliss when they have that match. So, Rich, your thoughts on that aspect of all this?
Yeah, I thought, when we talked about this a few weeks ago with Bray Wyatt, or I guess almost a month ago, this was shades of Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Back, where the titular character isn't Freddy Krueger, but keeps looking in the mirror and is becoming Freddy Krueger all the way up to one of the craziest scenes at a pool. Spoilers for a movie that came out in 1980, let's call it 86. But this is what's happening with Alexa. She kind of turned into the what was it, the Fiendess? I could never remember what, or maybe it was the Fiend again, just as a neutral genderless name. They were all the Fiend. But she, pulled that Sister Abigail. That was a slick move. However, going into wrestling, not logic, and then also what you had been saying kind of with appointment. I know you and Jason had expressed it the last time you guys got together with the way the last year has gone for Bianca, or at least the last 6 months. This I would add more than any of the promos, because what champion is just going to sit there as someone holds them in that awkward position and stare at them and then kind of shake out of it and let them go? Like, that was just really, really, that was beyond weird. It's as if there is built into Sister Abigail's kiss almost a paralytic agent that overtakes the victim, like she's a cobra or something before, or a hypnosis of staring into the eyes before the cobra bites or something silly like that. It made no sense. Like, if someone grabs me like that out of a hose, like, what are you doing, man? Like, what is this? Or you shove them away. It isn't like a grab, swing, and then it's over. Or even a grab, go for your finish, and you kind of do that little, ha-ha, we're just playing around. It's going back to, I know you always, like, the bad theater. And as much as I enjoy Fiend lore, as much as the next sucker, I don't enjoy when it's set up as, preamble to a title match. Because then again, it's getting out of its element. And now you got to put the title on someone that presumably can't be stopped, whether it's her or Bray.
Do you have any theories on where Bray is going to land, the whole character and what they're doing with him? He wasn't specifically on this episode, or was he? Did I miss something? I assume he wasn't.
No, the only Where's Waldo they did with a unstable person was Nikki Cross in the back. he was in during some of the interviews, you could see her kind of like jumping behind like boxes and utility stuff in the back.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, any current theories on Bray Wyatt before we move on to other Raw content?
I think Bray, I had thoughts about it, and I mentioned this before with Barry Windham's hospitalization. I think they kind of went out the window. I thought we were going to see a little bit more of Uncle Howdy and have him as the catalyst for the changes, whether it's face heel, heel face. But now with his hospitalization, I also think taking a step back, I mean, being named after your uncle and him being in a dire straits health-wise, they may pull back a little bit more on him. I noticed the Instagram he put up. He looked like a guy that was particularly in distress, as you would guess with a close family, because he talked about it. You know, when you're a kid, you read about superheroes, but to me, my superheroes were my dad and my uncle. And now one of them is like near death and has had a severe heart attack. And you can see how just take acting out of it. Like the man, like he's grieving and pain and just absolutely torn up about it. Do you want him on the road and do you want him to wrestle? Maybe wrestling is an escape. But if it isn't, do you want him to kind of tap into that dark place he needs to be the Fiend while he's in such an emotionally vulnerable state, especially given some of his mental health concerns and things he needed to do to be whole before he came back?
All right. Let's actually go to another email here. This is Jay from New York who says, hey, Wade and Rich, I'm watching Raw, and this Ms. Gargano-Loomis segment is unbearable. If Vince McMahon booked this, he would have been criticized all over the internet. After sitting through this horror, the payoff is a ladder match for next week's show? Should I even mention the barrage of corny testicle jokes? Awful. This is the best Triple H can do? Something needs to change faster. The ratings are going to keep decreasing. Subjecting the audience to Johnny Gargano every week is torment already, but this was over the line. Thanks and take care. I could have used this as sort of our lead into the Gargano-Miz discussion too, but this gets to a broader topic, and his subject line was the Loomis off the rose. Is, you know, we talk about the three-hour show being a problem, but I'm not going to take Triple H off the hook for putting this out there and spending so much time on this just because, well, I have 3 hours to fill, so I'm a victim. You're not a victim. There's other things you can do with this time. And I will, though, take him off the hook for the tiny balls thing, because that it seemed like it was an organic chant from the crowd, and Gargano sort of acknowledged it, and Miz just, you know, went into it. But I actually thought right before that crowd chant that they were thankfully moving away from that, that I felt like they had decided we're not going to do that anymore. And then the crowd chanted it. So I'm actually kind of anti-Milwaukee right now, or at least the fans in Milwaukee, for doing that. I don't want to be as anti-Milwaukee as Corey Graves seemed to be, but I'm down on the fans for turning that chant into a TV moment. Rich, your thoughts on that?
I thought, yeah, the tiny balls thing. And as I said before, there aren't many areas where Triple H and Vince McMahon like that Venn diagram intersect.
Yes.
One of them absolutely is ball jokes. Think about the DX, the dude who had kids getting kicked out of high school and grade school and all sorts of schools for crotch chops. And, you know, I remember I was in the crowd in Allentown when someone said he made the small package. And he's like, no, but I heard you did. And that was in mid-match. And people were like, oh, like the ball jokes, Triple H is Milia. Like that is his playground. And so I'm not shocked that that's one of the stories that maintained as opposed to some of the other things. Now, clearly, you need to kind of step beyond that and provide a little bit more if you want to maintain viewers. But as it's 3 hours, you need to fill time. And if every now and again it's got to be a bald joke or a shot to the groin or insert other silly thing that you would have seen back in the day on America's Funniest Home Videos, that's his wheelhouse. I also think that Miz is such a malleable character for them that they don't mind, and he doesn't mind. He'll do whatever it takes to get a storyline over, so it's fine. And ultimately for the Miz, he's a winner anyway, because how many people can say they went from reality TV guy that says, I want to be a pro wrestler, entering year 18 as one of their trusted lieutenants? And so he's fine. Yeah. Anything that happens, he's still on TV. So well, go ahead, wait. I'm
they
sorry.
Did a they did a nice job with the photos of Miz posing with the kids and the fans who got merch, and Miz just looked like he was having the worst time possible. And I actually thought, that, you know, for if you decide to do it, and you're going to say, hey, Miz, you got to wear an elf outfit, and that's part of your punishment, or, you know, that's the only way you're going to get a chance to win your money back is if you do this. At least they followed up on it and had some photos coming in and out of commercials. And I'm glad they didn't belabor it by actually, like, showing extended footage of it. It was just photos. And so, yeah, I thought that aspect was good.
Yeah, and it isn't, you know, I think some people, it's not going to be like the Rickles-esque style of NJF where he never turns off. I'm sure Miz also took photos of them where he was just happy with them and kind of like, thanks for playing along, because he's that sort of guy. But you're just going to have to kind of have your mileage vary on how tolerant you are of his, by his, I mean, Levesque's idea of what's funny.
Right. Yeah, that's been an issue for a while. JB from Detroit emailed and just said regarding what might happen I misread this. He actually brought up the rumor that Gunther and Lesnar might be the IC title match at WrestleMania. And I actually thought he was speculating on what might be happening with Bobby Lashley. But it does get into something I want to bring up, which is Solo floating over to Raw and wrestling with Sammy. Let me read his email, and then I'll explain why this jumps out to me. Okay. Something to read here among our emails. He says, obviously, WrestleMania is months away, and these things can frequently change, for sure. Understand there's a lot of clickbait out there, a lot of people who grab on a little nugget of something and turn it into something that leads to 6 weeks of speculation, and it was simply, you know, someone trying to connect dots that were never meant to be connected. All that said, and by the way, that's why I don't do a lot of that. I mean, it's fun to imagine what can happen, but the idea of this is planned, I just hear often enough, you know, how many of those stories are not true or were never true or were true for such a brief time that by the time it turned into a click headline trying to get SEO traction on the internet, it was no longer an idea. So I just try to stay away from that stuff. Plus, I'd rather honestly be surprised. I don't want to know what body was floating in the water at the end of season 2 of White Lotus. I want to watch it. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see it play out and experience it in real time, even if it was, quote, pre-taped. So with all that said, I still will read the email. So he says, for conversation's sake, if this is the case, what do you make of that matchup? Will it be primarily Raw-based for Lesnar or SmackDown-based for Gunther or a bit of both? As always, love the show and go VIP. So it's a little bit off the Raw topic, but I'll apply it to it in this way. What is the state of the roster split? And does Triple H really does it seem like he's put a lot of thought into it or has a clear strategy? Because you have – it's sort of like, well, because the Usos and Reigns hold belts, Raw and SmackDown belts, Solo and Sammy get to just appear on Raw without explanation for no apparent reason other than, well, there's a grudge or something like that. And so I'm kind of curious in a broader sense. You can comment on what you think about a Gunther-Lesnar match, which, by the way, I love, and I hope they do it, and I hope they do a good job with it, of course. But what do you think about the state of the roster split, including the bloodline sort of floating without explanation, and what does it tell you about what Triple H might be thinking in that regard?
Well, first of all, I get pulled so much into some of these things, not necessarily with wrestling, but of course with Prestige Television, and HBO has me. In the case of White Lotus, all of those shows are filmed at 4 seasons. And so keeping track with some friends as to which 4 seasons remain, that would be internationally kind of exotic enough for them to torture you with tales of avarice and desire. That almost seems like it would be an 80s tag team with Rick Rude and Jake the Snake, but that's a story for another day. Going to what you're saying, one, yes, Haas fight extraordinaire between Brock and Gunther, or if insert any of that mixture of Bobby Lashley, Gunther, Braun Breaker, and Brock Lesnar, here for it. In terms of the roster split, I'm going to now do my hand at kind of extended storyline. Because Sammy has been honorary oost, I guess, his oosiness has been confirmed, it seems like they've allowed him to use some of the power of the bloodline to kind of do what they do, which is wrestle wherever they want, when they want. And Solo kind of takes advantage of that as also being part of the bloodline. And I think that's been taken for granted in terms of explanation, but I think we've seen that over the last several years, that if you're in the bloodline, you can do whatever you want, wherever you want.
Yeah, I like my structure. I like there to be not arbitrary, mm-hmm. don't think about this, folks, but some sort of explanation for it.
Oh, and anyway. Then you had asked about the brand split. Looking at the way he's done it with dribs and drabs, it looks like he's getting rid of it for the most part. You have some mainstays that are Raw people. For instance, you don't see Johnny Gargano jumping around a lot. But if right. it's a big enough character, if he needs them on another show, they go on another show.
Yeah. No, I know. And I mean, and that Vince McMahon did it too. I guess I'm curious when it all shakes out, maybe after WrestleMania next year, is there some – does Levesque just kind of decide, here's what I want to do? Or does he stick with a soft roster split where if you're not one of the top four or five people on either show, you stick to the show you're on. But if you're one of the top four or five people, we're going to sometimes explain it, sometimes not. But you'll appear when needed on both shows for the sake of star power depth and drawing ratings. You know, roster split logic be damned.
Yeah, and I respect the idea of you're kind of earning the right to jump between shows in terms of like another carrot he can dangle for people who want to develop what they're doing.
Sure. I mean, yes. I still just want there to be a logical explained reason to the viewers how this thing works. I don't want it
yeah.
to just be like, well, he's a big star. That's why, and we're not going to say it, but you kind of understand it. Like, I want something a little bit more structured than that.
Well, I agree with your structure, but I would just point to the fact that I've got ESPN on in the background muted just as kind of, I was going to say white noise, but that isn't accurate. White vision,
white visual.
As a visual. And they just showed the WWE champion era Becky Lynch, This Is SportsCenter commercial. Mm-hmm. And so it's a simple rule. If you have commercials on another channel,